What's going on? Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It is heard live every day from noon to 3 on WBT Radio in Charlotte. And if you want exclusive content, like invitations to events, the weekly live stream, my daily show prep with all the links, become a patron, go to thepetecallinershow.com. Make sure you hit the subscribe button, get every episode for free, right to your smartphone or tablet. And again, thank you so much for your support. And on Wednesdays here, we check in with Western North Carolina, my pal Mark Starling. He's the morning guy at WWNC in Asheville, where there's always something crazy happening. Mark, how are you?
Well, Pete, how are you, sir?
I, too, am doing well. So I got a quick question. So this morning I asked you, or you, this morning you mentioned something that I had not heard. So I was hoping to get some more details from you on the new protocol, I guess, for strangling police officers in Asheville. Can you give me the details of this story?
Okay, so there was an undercover police officer. I believe she is a 17-year veteran of the Asheville Police Department. She was undercover in downtown Asheville. They were doing a surveillance of the Pack Square area because they had received an information tip that two individuals were going to set off some sort of explosive device in the downtown area. So they had this area surveilled, and she witnessed two of these individuals approach another individual who was there for a different protest reason. And I know what you're thinking. Wait a minute, Mark. Two protests in Asheville on the same day?
That never happens.
Have two protests on the same corner on the same day here. So,
right. I was going to say that's sort of the minimum. It's a minimum two protests for entry.
Yeah. Yeah, at least. So essentially, these two protesters from different factions ended up somehow getting into a war of words, and one of the gentlemen decided to pull out pepper spray and pepper sprayed the other guy.
Okay.
And then some melee broke out. There were several police officers down there that were tied up trying to make sure that other situations didn't boil over, right? So you had multiple cops down there. So the guy that actually assaulted this other man with the pepper spray starts to leave the scene. And this police officer, who was undercover, followed this guy and caught up with him as he was walking his bike down the sidewalk and grabbed his handlebars, showed her badge, and said, "Asheville Police Department, I need you to stop where you are." And his immediate reaction was to swing around and grab her by the throat and basically try to choke the life out of her for about 30 to 45 seconds. Thankfully, another officer saw the melee, heard what was going on, came over, and was able to get this guy off of her. So this guy goes through the court process and was given a 17-month suspended sentence and has to, you know, he'll be on probation, I believe, for 5 years or 10 years. So apparently the new punishment standard is if you come to Asheville and you try to strangle a police officer and kill them, not really going to serve any jail time per se. I mean, he did serve 3 months of jail time leading up to his trial.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, because he was a first-time offender, they said, just 17 months suspended sentence. So no jail time needed here. He's probably learned his lesson.
But, okay, so first off, is he really a first-time offender? Wouldn't the first offense be the pepper spraying up the street?
Correct.
Like
Correct.
I that would be part, I would think, of the, you know, the totality of the circumstances, number one.
Yeah.
Number two is the assault on a female, even though she is a
Correct.
Law enforcement officer, right? That's still that's a separate charge, assault on a female.
Right.
Then also assault on a law enforcement officer, assault with intent to, you know, do bodily injury and whatever. Like you got a bunch of different charges that you can go for here, but a 17-month suspended sentence means that if he gets into any trouble, then he would go to jail for the rest of the 17-month sentence.
Correct.
But if he stays out of trouble, then he just can, hang out at home and go to work or school or whatever.
Yeah, now I'm sure he'd be checking in with a probation officer or a parole officer or something like that. But, you know, I think it sends a message that says we're not really all that tough on crime here.
Mm-hmm. But I'm sorry. Did you think that there was a different message that was being sent from Asheville all this time?
It is the message that gets reiterated here often.
Yes. Like, you're just reinforcing the message. That's all.
Sure.
Right. Just
sure.
In case anybody thought things had changed, because I remember we talked about this before, where Asheville had started this crazy notion that they were going to step up enforcement efforts in specifically the downtown area, because it had become such a hotbed of crime and drug use and insanity and homelessness. Sorry. People experiencing houselessness, and that businesses and workers and tourists were not comfortable being downtown Asheville. And so they were like, hey, why don't we try this crazy idea of like policing? And they did it like on a pilot project status, right? So like maybe things were getting better.
Now it's permanent.
Oh, it's permanent.
Now they've made it permanent.
Okay.
And they have miraculously the county has put forth a couple of deputies for Fridays and Saturday nights that also patrol there now. So there's a joint task force, if you will.
Not that's not pot related. Not that kind of joint task force.
Well, no, right. No.
Okay.
No, that's still going on.
All right. Yeah. So you got the city and the county, and they're working together. And I am curious about this explosion. Explosive device tip. Did anything ever come of that?
They did eventually set off some sort of explosive device at the PAX or at the former Vance Monument. Thankfully, there was no one around for there to be any injuries or anything like that. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that case is still in process of it's still ongoing.
Wait a minute. All right, hang on a second. So wait a minute. So they had surveillance set up at this location because they had a tip that this was going to happen. Someone was going to try to blow up. The Vance Monument isn't even there anymore. It's just the base of the thing, which the courts just said they can take down. The city's going to remove it. So they got wind that someone was going to jump the line here and blow it up before the city could remove it, I guess. And so they got distracted by the strangler guy, and that's
I don't think the explosion actually happened that same night.
Oh.
So I think when that explosive device did go off in PAX Square, the same individual that was part of the original duo was part of what went on when that explosive did go off. And I want to say that it was maybe up to a week later. There was an awful lot going on here in Asheville right around this time between the protests and vandalism and
the rash of
crime that was happening. So
gotcha.
It was all very kind of convoluted there for a while. It all kind of meshed together because so many of these crimes were actually related,
right?
Because they were protest and activist driven,
right? No. It was journalist driven, as I understand it, with the Asheville Blade. All those journalists, quote unquote, that got arrested for the, jumping on the cops and all that stuff. Yeah.
I mean, now that would be the newspaper that the founder of that newspaper or online rag has been accused of sexual assault and rape multiple times. But
no.
The Alphabet community refuses to acknowledge that. Well, I shouldn't say that. Certain parts of the LGBT crowd will not acknowledge that. I should just say the T part of the LGBT will not acknowledge it and basically has turned him into the victim.
Really?
So. Oh, yeah.
This is the guy that used to be the Mountain Express reporter. I used to have him on my show once a week.
That guy.
Wow.
Yeah. What? I think he used to show up in dress, wearing a dress and a combat boots, didn't he?
Not on my show.
Oh.
Back then, he was just covering city council meetings.
Yeah, well, this is... I think we're talking about the same person. I hope we're talking about this. We might not be talking about the same person.
I'll just say it. His name is David Forbes.
This weird.
It's David Forbes.
Yeah, David Forbes. Same person.
Okay.
But, I mean, let's face it. There could be multiple like that people that fit that description here.
True. No, that's fair. Yeah, that's fair. All right, so there you go. So apparently... strangling a police officer in Asheville just gets you 17-month suspended sentence. So, if you have a predisposition to do that sort of thing, I guess Asheville is your place. Now, if you're a law enforcement officer and would not like to be strangled and see your attacker get off with a 17-month suspended sentence, then I would recommend you get out of the city of Asheville. That's my recommendation.
Yeah, from what I hear, Gaston County?
Oh, yeah.
$15,000. Listen, Pete, I might go do that.
Nice.
I
would have a source inside the police department then. That would be awesome.
You'd have all the info.
I don't think you're going to make a good cop, though. I don't think you'd make a good cop.
No. No, my 20s is preventing me from doing that, I'm pretty sure.
All right. This is Mark Starling from WWNC out in Asheville. I appreciate your time, Mark. Thank you, sir.
You got it, my friend. Have a great day.
All right, man. Appreciate it. Yeah, you can catch him on the radio, but also on the iHeartRadio platform and any of the podcasts. He has a show up there as well. Did you know that an explosive device went off at Pack Square, downtown Asheville? That's nuts. This is what I mean. People don't realize, like, outside of Western North Carolina, and people in Western North Carolina, they know this, that outside of that area, people do not know what's going on in Western North Carolina. It's like it's a whole different state, but it literally is not. It's the same state, people. Got a message here to Pete at thepetecalendershow.com. I was not aware of this. Pete, you probably already noticed this, but the site you mentioned yesterday, I am always a day behind listening to your podcast, but it has been taken down. And so I checked this out. I confirmed. digmountzion.charlotte.edu has been taken down. I mentioned this site yesterday. Now, hang on a second. Maybe me talking about it sent so much traffic to the website that it crashed it. And it's been down for like a whole day since. What? No, that could happen. What? no, because otherwise, then it means that somebody must have heard the show at UNCC or something and took the page down for some other reason, which I'm unclear as to why you would take it down. Why would you take it down? That doesn't make any sense. You're doing an archaeological dig in... Hang on a second. I got other information. So this was from Brian, who said, I heard the show on the podcast, as usual, and wanted to give a little more info on the Israel dig if you are interested. The Mount Zion dig is very close to the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. I had the opportunity to go to Israel in January 2020, just before COVID. We passed the UNCC dig on our way to watch the welcoming of the Sabbath at the Western Wall. There aren't any homes nearby that could have been displaced. It's beside the wall system that surrounds the old city, which is why the article you were referencing said it was near one of the gates. It's a gate in the medieval wall system. In the pictures, and he has some pictures here, the wall in the background was built by the Turkish Empire in the same area that the original wall around Jerusalem in the Old Testament, New Testament eras would have been located. There weren't any modern houses there. The City of David archaeological area is indeed about a half a mile to three quarters of a mile away, which was what I suspected, given the information I had seen. That site could be displacing Palestinian homes as they are digging underneath them to discover things from the time of King David and King Solomon. But even with that possibility, I remember that there was one site connected to the dig, the Pool of Siloam. That was only about halfway dug up. The other half was on land owned by Palestinians, and they would not sell, even though they had been offered multiples of what the land was actually worth. But they would not give the Israeli archaeologists the satisfaction of being able to dig out the other half of the pool, which was in use at the time of Jesus, and it was even visited by Jesus. And then he's got a picture of that. He says they were not actively digging at that time since it was January. The kids raising a ruckus at UNCC have no idea where things are in Israel, no context for the complaints that they are lodging, and no understanding of what a huge privilege it is for UNCC to have the opportunity to bring students there for real, authentic, meaningful archaeological research. It's almost as trite as Orange Man Bad. I swear, I do not know why they would take down the website. Makes no sense. Okay, if you're listening to this podcast, you are obviously paying attention to the world around us. You also have really great taste, I might add. But if you haven't started getting prepared for various emergencies, I gotta ask, what are you waiting for? Please call my friends Bill and Jan at Carolina Readiness Supply, and they'll help get you started. If you have no idea how to start, they can help you. If you're an experienced prepper, they can help you too. Being prepared is just smart. We've already established that you're smart. I mean, you listen to this podcast after all. So let's put those smarts into action. Go to CarolinaReadiness.com. That's CarolinaReadiness.com or call them at 828-226-7239. Carolina Readiness Supply has 2,000 square feet of supplies as well as educational materials that you're going to need for any kind of emergency. Veteran-owned Carolina Readiness Supply. Will you be ready when the lights go out? Vice President Kamala Harris headed back to North Carolina for the second week in a row. Vice President Kamala Harris is headed to North Carolina. She's going to be in Charlotte tomorrow. She's going to help open a field office there, which is very nice if the weather's nice. It's the downside about field offices. Like if it rains, you're just out there. It's really hot. You just kind of cook. You know, field offices can be bad like that. But this is going to be one of the 10 that the campaign is launching across the state in an effort to elect Democrats in 2024. The campaign has not provided details of the trip as of yet. I don't have any, but if she's coming in tomorrow, expect traffic to be crap. It's going to be bad. That's tomorrow. The Biden-Harris campaign has made North Carolina the battleground state of this election. Well, at least according to the North Carolina Democrats, which totally need the fundraising of the national party and the presidential reelection campaign. They need that money. So you always got to keep in mind here, right? You've got the state parties, state and local candidates, and in a presidential year, they really, really, really want a lot of attention from the federal, from the national level races, because then a lot of the money flows in and they get benefits for that. They get the fundraising emails. They get that support. They get, you know, ground troops, you know, door knockers and stuff, advertising dollars, fundraising events where you can go and hang out with the president, right? So there's a lot of juice that you get when you're a swing state. And so the North Carolina Democrat Party has been, you know, basically making this case to the national party for like the last, I don't know, 15 years or so. Like, we're really a swing state, guys. Don't ignore us. You know, we could totally win this thing. And then they just keep losing these national rate, or the federal offices, I should say, because they have won the governor's races. But they haven't won a Senate seat here since Kay Hagan lost. I mean, well, since her last win, right? Tom Tillis beat her because Richard Burr was in the other seat for years before that. So it's been a while, you know, it's been a while. So they sent out this, the North Carolina Democrat Party sent out this fundraising deal, this email. President Biden, Vice President Harris, and First Lady Jill Biden, sorry, Dr. Jill Biden. You call her Dr. Jill. They've made multiple stops in our state this year already. And this Thursday, we are excited to welcome the VP back to the Tar Heel State. A few weeks ago, the chair, they call her Chair Clayton Anderson, I think is her last name, she got to ride in the motorcade with Vice President Harris. Ooh, I'm so excited for her. Did she say y'all? That's the strategy, by the way, to win back all of the rural conservative Democrat voters that have abandoned the Democrat Party for the last 20 years. She says y'all a lot. And she's from a rural county, y'all. And see, so she speaks your language, y'all. And anyway, so she helped Vice President Harris launch her Students for Biden-Harris. And they had like some young kids there. Okay. In Durham. Y'all, it was in Durham. So there's that. But there's also some worry. There's some concern. Because in connection with the UNCC, demands from the Student Government Association and these Marxists in the student government that were demanding UNCC give up its partnership with the archaeological dig, which now UNCC has taken down its webpage about the Mount Zion dig. But they demanded the school do something. The school board, to their credit, they were like, look, we've told y'all we're not doing this. We're not entertaining this. You do not speak for the student body and all this stuff. So good for them for doing that, for pushing back on these Marxist moon bets. I don't know why the page is down, but this speaks to the larger problem that the Democrat Party has. And they want to pretend that this isn't the case, but it is most assuredly the case. James Carville, this was on CNN. He says, I've been very vocal about this. It's horrifying. Our numbers among younger voters, particularly younger blacks and younger Latinos and whatever, because he didn't know like what the word was. I think he was trying to remember Latinx or whatever, Latinx or whatever, or Hispanics, like what word, like he doesn't know what word to use. So of course he's a racist because he doesn't know what word to use because they keep changing the words, but blacks, younger Latinos and whatever, younger people of color, particularly males, we're not shedding them. They are leaving in droves. He says, if we don't take time to understand their lives, they think all politics is just a bunch of BS, people arguing back and forth. Here I am, 26 years old, given interest rates, insurance costs, everything going on. I don't think I'll ever own a house. I'm living with my parents. I think the whole thing is just BS. And I've expressed my contempt or apathy at the system. I'm disengaged. I'm not going to argue with you, but I'll say this to you. You're right. After 4 years, Biden will be gone and Trump will be gone, and maybe the country can get on with a future that includes you. But if Trump wins, understand what you have at stake in this election, right? So that's what his message is to young males of color, okay? And he's like, Trump's allowed to pack the Supreme Court and all this, which Trump has not said he would pack the Supreme Court. That was actually Joe Biden who said he would like to pack the Supreme Court, right? This is something the Democrats are promising to do because packing the Supreme Court has a meaning. That phrase means something. It means adding additional seats so you can put more of your partisan appointees on the bench and take over the court. That's what court packing has always meant. It hasn't meant filling vacancies that already existed. Like the seat was there, somebody died, somebody retired, you fill the vacancy through the normal process. That has never been the definition of court packing. That has its own term, which is filling the vacancy, making an appointment, right? This is the problem that the Democrats have. They've got a base that is disengaged from them, and they've got a part of their coalition, the base coalition, that is out there protesting at Democrats' appearances. Biden's appearance. Yesterday I talked about Jamie Raskin's appearance at the University of Maryland, and he's getting shouted down by the Marxist pro-Palestinian groups, right? They got a real issue here. Here it is. I had this story here. Washington Post. A confidential memo circulated among top Democrat donors has sparked a furious debate in Democrat circles about whether to narrow the focus of voter registration efforts to avoid signing up potential Republicans. Right. So it's like, hey, we want everybody to vote. Democracy and all. Save the democracy. Oh, wait. Oh, hang on a second. You might be a Republican. I don't need you to register. All right, so the Washington Post headline, Democrats spar over registration as worries over young and minority voters grow. For decades, nonpartisan groups allied with the Democrat Party have run wide-ranging efforts aimed at increasing voter registration among people of color, or POCs, and young people. Groups that tend to lean Democrat but have historically voted at much lower rates than older people and white people. Wait a minute. The Washington Post capitalized white. But when did that happen? When did they start capitalizing white? I thought white wasn't supposed to be capitalized because of oppression reasons. They were colonizers. What? Anyway, in recent years, there has been a marked shift among the roughly 1 in 5 citizens of voting age who are unregistered. And that shift has gone towards Republicans, raising fresh questions about how much boosting nonpartisan voter registration could help presumptive GOP nominee Donald Trump heading into November, right? So when they knew that getting the young people to vote would help them, rock the vote, y'all, right? When they knew that it was going to help them, they were all about it. Now they're like, we don't want to do this. Aaron Strauss, an influential data scientist who helps direct progressive spending at the firm Open Labs, sparked private disagreements over this issue in January when he sent about a dozen major Democrat donors a confidential memo that challenged traditional nonpartisan registration. He said, quote, "If we were to blindly register non-voters and get them on the rolls, we would be distinctly aiding Trump's quest for a personal dictatorship." Oh, sorry. Let's give it its due. Yeah. Well, I mean, he said dictatorship. He also warned that efforts to gain Democrat votes among younger and non-black people of color were often expensive. You know what it costs to get one vote in 2020 to get one vote among this demographic? Younger Hispanics. Younger non-black people of color. So what does that mean? I guess it could mean Asians as well. Hispanics. What else? I'm not aware of any other group, but like, I don't know. So, but that's what they call them. Cost per vote, $1,200. That's what Democrats spend. $1,200 per net vote. Because the groups now include so many non-Democrats. Among voters of color, he wrote that, quote, "Only African-American registration is clearly a prime opportunity," adding that netting Democrat voters among black people costs only $575 per vote. So it's like half, less than half, right? So if you're trying to maximize votes for your dollar, right, you're going to target people based on their race. Hang on a second. That is kind of the Democrat brand. He called on donors to nonpartisan nonprofits to also donate to political groups that focus on voter registration spending on specific heavily pro-Biden populations like black Americans, while using more targeted techniques among other groups to filter out likely Trump supporters. Campaigns, parties, or super PACs can more directly target who they try to register. So this is the problem. Democrats have spent years building up these nonprofits that operate very much as surrogate Democrat organizations, right? But now, because of the changing ideologies and perspectives of younger voters, particularly non-black people of color, younger voters, it's too expensive, right? It's not as easy to get Democrat votes by targeting the population based on these other characteristics, right? So now, one of the things they did discover during Obama's run was that if you go out and do the voter registration as a totally nonpartisan, nonprofit, third-party organization, but you just happen to be wearing like a T-shirt that says something kind of like Hopi Changey or something, you get more Democrats signed up. And so that's now standard. But now even that's not working, so that because they're apparently younger people, they like Trump a little too much. All right, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. I could not do the show without your support and the support of the businesses that advertise on the podcast. So if you'd like, please support them too and tell them you heard it here. You can also become a patron at my Patreon page or go to thepetecallinershow.com. Again, thank you so much for listening, and don't break anything while I'm gone.